you know, we're in a sick society, you know, and normally we get sick and we just go and we deal with the symptoms and we take a pill or pharmaceutical to numb the symptoms. Where we are this very complex organism, and we've co-evolved with all of these incredible plant allies that are often weeds in our yards that are so incredibly powerful and are so healing. And having a relationship with the plants around us and inviting them into our healing journey is so deep.
Welcome to the Stay Grounded podcast. I'm your host, Raj Jana, founder of Liberate, and it's my mission to help you become the most grounded, loving, and authentic version of yourself that you can be. Each week, I interview experts in the fields of mindset, spirituality, and emotional well-being. My brilliant guests share their tools, stories, and unique perspectives to help you develop the skills you need to show up fully for the people and things that matter most in your life. Now let's dive in. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this special episode of Stay Grounded with my dear friend, Mr. Stephen Brooks. So Stephen is one of the brightest lights I know. Just truly, I don't know anybody like Stephen. He is an ethnobotanist, a permaculture teacher, passionate speaker and educator, and founder of thriving ecological communities, Punta Mona, La Ecovia, Tacotal, and Alegria Village. He's also a co-founder of Envision Festival, an educational and conscious celebration in Costa Rica. He's much more. You're going to learn a lot about Stephen on this episode. Stephen, I met him last year when I was in Nosara for the first time, and I truly have never met somebody who has a more devotional relationship to plants and Mother Nature than Stephen Brooks. I mean, he is somebody who has truly devoted himself to understanding plants in all their forms, tending to them, nurturing them, listening to them, and as a result has a very unique perspective on the role that plants can play on our well-being, a very unique role on the way that we can live in harmony with nature, and a very unique way of thinking about how we can use plants to heal ourselves and the world around us. And I really appreciated this episode because Stephen's got just such an infectious way of transmuting his passion for anything he talks about. He truly is one of those guys that I just want to squeeze and hug so dearly. And I learned a lot about just the healing nature of plants and the way that nature brings us into deeper relationship with unconditional love. The principles of permaculture and herbalism. I actually don't know anybody in the world who's probably more qualified to speak on those topics than Stephen. And just in general, I feel like Stephen really embodies a very gracious and devotional way of being to joy and to love. And every time I'm around him, I feel my spirits lift up. I feel lighter. And I hope after listening to this episode, you feel the same. So Stephen has a new herbalism course out. So if anything that you heard on this podcast is interesting and intriguing, we have a link in the show notes to his new course at Ecoversity. And in general, I hope you enjoy this podcast. Thank you so much for being here and for giving us the gift of your attention. And without further ado, here is my dear friend, Mr. Stephen Brooks. Enjoy. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Raj, so good to be here.
Oh my gosh, I miss you. I love you. I am grateful that I'm grateful for you in my life and for all the moments we've had. And I'm selfishly really excited to get this personal time with you to actually dive into your genius, which I feel like I've spent so much time with you and we've had so many amazing conversations. We've played a lot, but like for me to sit here and just in the learning seat and to learn from who I consider a true master of what we're about to talk about is really special. So thank you again for being who you are and for being open to being here with me.
Yes.
Big idea, but I think one of the things we were talking about before we hit the record button was just this idea, this philosophy, this revolution I feel like that you're really speaking to, which is that we are our own healers. And in some ways we've forgotten that in society. And I want to speak to maybe like, when did you realize this potential for yourself? When did you start to realize that you could that you had this ability to heal yourself through plants, through nature, through just everything that you've experienced in your life.
Yeah, I mean, I would say what I realize is just how incredible our partnership with nature is, you know, and plants in particular. Like, plants are here to serve us and love us and take care of us and like feed us and make us smell good and make and connect us to spirit and house us and clothe us. I mean, plants are freaking incredible. Like, if you were to put a little, I don't know if you do this, but if you put like a little title under my name, often like what I consider myself first and foremost is an ethnobotanist. And ethnobotany is the study of the relationship between humans and plants. It's such a profound, incredible relationship. And I've been, you know, almost 30 years, like deeply diving into the botanical world. And it's so interesting. As I'm sitting here, I'm looking at out my window at a tree full of aki. I don't know if you're familiar with aki, but it's an African fruit that's like the national dish of Jamaica. And they look like, they call it in Spanish, seso vegetal, or vegetable brains. And they look like brains, and you fry them up and they're like, they almost taste like scrambled eggs with mushrooms. It's like the most unbelievable perennial vegetable from a tree that, anyway, I got a plant in my eye as I'm talking about how much I love plants. You know, there's so many incredible plants out there, and they're so that they love us. They're like the quintessential unconditional love. Like, even as we like destroy their ecosystems and don't take such great care of them, like, the plants just keep showing up. The plants just keep showing up, wanting to love us and wanting to heal us and wanting to take care of us. And that's deep, you know. It's a deep relationship. And I'm honored, you know. I feel like I've been like, you know, almost like chosen to speak for the plants, you know. And
why do you feel like we've lost our connection to plant wisdom? Why do you feel like we've lost our connection to nature wisdom? And, you know, what's at the root of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, it's just industrial society. It's like, why we work and make money and just buy things. Like, we've lost that connection of making things and growing things. You know, it's like 100 years ago, everybody pretty much farmed, you know, had a garden. You know, it's been this mass exodus to the city and factories and, you know, and it's like unbelievable how quickly people stop growing things, you know, and making things. You know, it's like, it's, so I think that separation from nature has just like shattered that connection. I mean, there, you know, indigenous people in the Amazon can literally smell urine of an animal from 150 meters away and know what animal it is, you know. Or, you know, it's like we've lost that connection. I mean, you know, even things like, you know, ayahuasca. Ayahuasca is a brew usually of two plants, the ayahuasca vine, which is the Vanisteriopsis capi, and the chacruna, which is an understory shrub. Neither of those plants are very impressive looking. You know, they're in the Amazon where there's 40,000 species of plants, you know, and these two plants, you know, they, like I said, they're not like that impressive looking, yet indigenous people have figured out if you take the bark of the vine and massive amounts of leaf of this understory shrub in the coffee family, and you brew them together for many, many hours, you get this magical brew. Like, how did indigenous people figure that out? Is because they are so in tune with the freaking plants. Like, they're listening to the symphony, you know, to the song of the plants. And, you know, I've been 30 years trying to understand and listen to that symphony and to decipher what the plants are saying. And it's deep and it's profound. And I think my whole adult life has been dedicated to trying to create the bridge between the human and the plant world, you know, and I've done that through many different kind of journeys. You know, it's like, I've been in Costa Rica for 30 years. I came here on vacation. And while I was here, I witnessed a playground full of indigenous children get sprayed by a chiquita banana crop duster.
I was just about to ask you about, like, how did you get into, where did your heart wake up for this? And yeah. I remembered, yeah, to, let's talk about that. Cause it's even just hearing that a second, I've heard it before, but even hearing that now just like sends shivers up my spine. Cause it's like,
yeah,
You know, I just can't imagine, like, when you're in that moment, witnessing that. How old were you?
I was 20. But the thing is, Raj, it's still happening every day right now here in this beautiful, green, ecological, blissful country. You know, it's happening right now. You know, and it's happening in the banana plantations, and it's happening in the pineapple farms, and it's happening in the coffee farms, and it's happening in the African palm farms. And just the way we're growing things and the way we're treating human beings, the way we're treating the earth, forget about it, like the massive monoculture and the deforestation right up to the rivers, you know, but the way we're treating the people, mostly, you know, the poor, you know, indigenous people, were, it's atrocity. It's an absolute atrocity. And like, I witnessed it. I was like, I pulled the emergency brake on my life. Like, what in the hell is going on here? And who's responsible? I just wanted to like blame. I wanted to blame Monsanto or Chiquita Banana or governments, you know, but it's like, blame me. Blame me as I sliced my bananas into my, you know, cereal every morning. Like, I was spraying those children. I was a part of that process, you know, and it was like, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be a part of that anymore. I want to stop doing it. I want to help other people to get out of a system that is so unfair and so unfair for everyone.
What's that? It's such a heavy dose of truth that I think is hard for people to swallow. Let's say we get to that point, let's say I'm sitting here now and I've heard this truth. What do I do next? How do I begin to shift? Because I can't imagine it's an overnight change. Like, you don't change, go from this, oh, I'm in the system, I'm plugged into the matrix, like that, to overnight, you know, living in Costa Rica, doing like, how do you, like, what is the, like, if you had to paint out like a 5-year plan for somebody to start making these changes and get there, like, how would you even present this?
Yeah, I mean, I would say like the simplest thing you could do is suspend your Amazon Prime, you know, and stop buying things from people you don't, you know, really just really figure out where your things are coming from, your food and your medicine and all the things you use, you know, it's like, and of course there's exceptions. I have Amazon Prime and I order things and it's a transition, you know. In permaculture, we call it transitional ethics. And it's like, you're right. It's not from today to tomorrow, everything's going to be different. We're going to be living in an eco village, growing all our own food. Our children are going to be, you know, up in the trees eating, although it's happening. I'll talk more about it, but it's a transition and we need to gracefully transition. I think we start by starting to connect with our food, join a CSA, go to the farmer's market, go volunteer on a farm nearby where you live and connect and feel the soil that's growing your food. And, you know, go to the farmer's market and look the farmers in the eye and thank them for growing your food. You know, it's crucial. It's crucial that we start reconnecting. You know, the other thing you can do is start spending time in nature. You know, put it in, like, make it like a mandatory thing that you spend X amount of time per week, you know, in deeply in nature without your phone and without your technology. I think those are like simple kind of, you know, right now everyone can start doing those kind of things.
That was one of my, you know, when we met last year, just watching how much reverence you carried for food. I remembered every time I was with you, you would lead a prayer. You'd hold every single person's hand. You'd look every single person in the eyes and you would just send so much love and gratitude and thank you. And I just remember that leaving such an impact on me, because you're right. Like, just that simple act of slowing down before we consume, to acknowledge all the hands that went into preparing something, or all of the work that went into creating a meal, or all of the animals that gave their lives so that we could have this delicious food. I mean, just something simple like that, like, pulls you out of this noisy, chaotic state of separation. And you do it so masterfully. I mean, was that something that you always were able to do, or is that something that you cultivated over time? Like, where did that in some ways, like, devotional nature of your relationship to food really kind of begin, and how is that cultivated over time?
So I start after that whole experience with the banana plantations, I started a farm called Punta Mona on the Caribbean side near the Panama border, which had no road to get there. And people started flocking there. You know, I started a tour company for high school and college students, but then I had all these volunteers living there. And from a very early, you know, we were growing the food with so much love, and it was such hard work that it was like we connected. It was such a profound relationship with the meal. Not to mention that we grew the food, but then we cooked it together with so much reverence and so much, so that every day before lunch and dinner, not breakfast because people are grumpy, but every day before lunch and dinner, one of our rituals, we would hold hands around our meals and just give thanks and stop for long enough to just take a breath together. And, you know, the place, there was people coming going. So it was nice to, like, if there's new people, they can introduce themselves and say where they're from and their favorite fruit, which is something I've always done. You know, I think that's where it really started. And I do it no matter who I'm with, no matter where I am. Before eating, I hold hands and I take a breath and I just feel gratitude. And it feels really important. It feels really important. And again, if you're like saying for like the person that's, you know, living in the matrix, that's live, you know, do that. Like, just do that every day, no matter who you're with, especially if you're with very conventional people that would never normally do that.
Why do you feel like that's so important?
I just think we're moving so fast, you know, and everything's happening so fast that it's like, it's kind of like why yoga has become so popular. It's like people get to just pause, you know. I think taking that pause is so important, you know. It's so important to pause long enough to just feel the magic of the miracles that are happening every day. I mean, just the fact that you were born, Raj, it's so funny. I used to do this thing with junior high students and I would ask their teacher and I'd be like, hey, is it okay if we talk about sex? And the teacher would look at me like, oh Jesus, what is he about to say? And I was like, do you know how babies are made? And people, sex. And then this is the place of science. And I said, and then somebody finally said the sperm and the egg. I was like, wait, we said the sperm. Do you actually know how many sperm are there swimming towards the egg? And it's actually somewhere between 5 and 20 million sperm.
Wow.
And how many make it, Raj?
One.
And who's that?
It's this guy.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone that's watching, you are the second year born, 5 to freaking 20 million. So it's like, you are a miracle, and you are a miracle, and we are a cluster of miracles. You know, so it's like, how can we not constantly be reminded, you know? And even little things like not having an earache, we take it for granted. Let's celebrate. We don't have earaches right now or toothaches. You know, it's just like, we can't forget all the great things that are happening right now. You know, it's like, we need to constantly be reminded. And I feel like one of my missions is just to constantly remind people.
Were you always like that? This is something I'm actually genuinely curious. Like, Stephen, like, you truly are one of the most, like I could feel you so deeply. And this is like why I'm so grateful that I'm hearing this in this way, because like, I don't know many people that actually fully embody this message. Like, was it easy for you to do this, or was it something that you kind of had to like learn?
I lived off the grid, meaning no boat, no road to get there. For 20 something years, you know? So like I would go 6 weeks without seeing a car, or touching money often.
Wow.
So I'm a unique bird, you know? I lived out there. Most of the food we ate, we grew. Like, you know, I worked in the garden every day. Like, I was so connected with the plants. So I think that's really what, you know, rewired me to be this way, you know? And, yeah, I think that's, I haven't always been this way. You know, I've always been, you know, my dad was a dentist of an island in the Bahamas. So growing up, I spent a lot of time in nature. So I was deeply connected to nature from a young age. And that, you know, I was always in just deep awe of nature, but like this much passion around, just presence. And yeah, I would say it was from all those years out at Punta Mona.
Yeah. And what do you think it is about nature that brings out presence?
I think part of it, I mean, especially the plant side of it, is just the unconditional love. Like, that's all we need, is to remember unconditional love. It's like deep love. That's all we need. And the whole world would be perfect. We just can connect with deep love, all of us. We wouldn't fight. We wouldn't compete. We wouldn't, you know, I mean, on a macro, I'm not like, you know, being all idealistic, but you know, it's like, I think if we all connected with just deep unconditional love, and that's what the plants are just exuding.
How, so screaming. Like, can you elaborate, like, How does a plant show you unconditional love?
I mean, just with the incredible foods. I can walk outside right now, Raj, and get three or four different fruits that would blow your freaking mind. Right now, I have a giant jackfruit on my deck right now. Giant. I have to go process. I have a mame zapote in my fridge. I don't know if you've had mame zapote, but it's like, makes you melt. It's so freaking delicious. I can get it and show it to you. I have this other rare fruit called Spanish tamarind in my kitchen right now, soaking in water that we're making juice. I mean, like, you know, and then, you know, I mean, even just the example of ayahuasca, I mean, which I'm not even that into, but like, I'm seeing what it's doing in our community. You know, it's like, these things are like, the plants are here for us. Like, they keep feeding us the most delicious things and healing. They just keep healing us, you know?
That's
and
it.
And I've just been dedicated to teaching. You know, I mostly, like, my day job is I teach permaculture.
Yeah.
I've been teaching, you know, since 2001. I took my course in 1999. And permaculture is just, if you're not familiar, it's like an ecological design philosophy. And what I love so much about it is it doesn't tell you what to do, Raj. It tells you how to think. And it's not a set of agricultural principles. Actually, it doesn't really have much to do with agriculture. It's really just about energy, you know, and how can we meet our goals and use less energy? It's like, it's just so simple, you know? And it's, we talk about this word called EROI, energy returned on energy invested, especially on non-renewable resources of the earth. Like, we're constantly thinking, what am I using right now? How much energy is it taking? And can I be more efficient, you know? And can I be more intentional? You know, it's all a big fat duh, you know, none of it's very like complicated or genius, but it's just getting in touch with the amount of energy we're using to thrive and how can we do better and working collectively to do that. And then with that philosophy, how can we design human settlements so we can do this thing called life better?
How do we get out? So, like, I'm just thinking out loud right now. Like, I feel like a big part of the resistance to going into this type of philosophy is in some ways like an ingrained laziness around, like, oh, we've been just conditioned to get things faster, to get things easier, to move quickly. How do you teach this in, like, people that come to permaculture, people that are interested? Like, how do you teach, like, kind of coming back to the roots of remembering and, like, being excited about, you know, something taking longer, or being excited about returning to the true cost of living? Like, how do you teach that?
I would say one way we teach it is we teach permaculture courses. I used to teach them live at Punta Mona, 3 week to 2 to 3 week intensives, which, you know, it's so funny because I never would have thought, but I actually like teaching better online now, permaculture, because it's over 6 months. And anyone could do it. Anyone could take a course over 6 months, you know, and it gives you a lot more time to digest. So it's not like so much information so fast. You actually have the time to digest the information. And then part of the permaculture course is you have a design project that you work on, and you actually have the time to do it a lot more relaxed. So I started a company called Ecoversity with my dear friend Alexa, and yeah, I'm so proud of it because we actually started it in 20. Alexa was one of my students, permaculture students in Punta Mona. And she was so impressive that I ended up, I founded a big festival down here called Envision. I co-founded. And on the spot, we brought her on as the marketing director of Envision, which she did for a few years. And then both of us were just feeling, we got to do more together. And this isn't it. And so we both left Envision and started Ecoversity with the goal of really trying, you know, it's like, well, you ask, how can you, like, there's real reprogramming that we need. I think the 6-month permaculture course is an incredible, incredible, just mind reset, you know, like paradigm reset on, you know how I compare it, Raj, is, you know, like, remember before we all had our Macs, what were those old computers called, the other kind?
You know, I'm not going to know. I'm like, what is it? PCs? Yeah. PCs. Yeah.
Remember the old computers? So everyone that has a PC, they have this thing in it that's an antivirus, right? And what an antivirus does is every computing that happens, you pass through a filter, right? That's kind of what permaculture is. It's like all of a sudden, no matter what you're thinking about doing or buying or acting on or anything, you're passing through a filter. Wait a minute. Can I be more conscious about the way I'm going to do this? Can I be more mindful of the resources that I'm using and still meet my goal So that's the permaculture course. And then another course that we're teaching that we were talking about is we're about to launch a 6-month herbal certificate, which is it's an herbal program that is just, we literally brought together some of the best, you know, herbal educators in the world. I mean, I just want to tell you that the key teacher is this woman, Rosemary Gladstar, and I actually spoke to her this morning. She's kind of the grandmother of modern herbalism. She opened the first herb store in America. She's one of the co-founders of a traditional medicinal tea company, and she's one of the lead teachers. And she is like,
what is herbalism? Like, I understand permaculture, but like, how does herbalism play into permaculture? Are they both in tandem things that are done? Like, and is like herbalism a part of permaculture?
Yeah. I mean, herbalism, like, we want to heal. Like, we're, you know, we're in a sick society, you know, and normally we get sick and we just go and we deal with the symptoms and we take a pill or pharmaceutical to numb the symptoms, where we are this very complex organism. And we've co-evolved with all of these incredible plant allies that are often weeds in our yards that are so incredibly powerful and are so healing. And having a relationship with the plants around us and inviting them into our healing journey is so deep. It's so deep. So like I said, we brought together some of the best herbalists on earth. You know, many I've never taught to ever. Rosemary Gladstar kind of being the lead, but this other woman, Serafina Capranos, that's just incredible. This woman, Sobande, I mean, just like people from all over the world, you know, that Kat Myers, who's just this brilliant, brilliant herbalist, Asia Dorsey. I mean, it was just like people from all over the world. Adriana Ayalas, who's one of the founders of Anima Mundi, Paul Stamets, looks like the mycologist, Paul Stamets. Just some of the most Rising Appalachia, come on. And my friend, Susan Leopold, who's the executive director of Plant Savers, all the most, literally the most amazing herbalists in the world are coming together to share knowledge that literally will radically shift the way you view your health.
And particularly, if I'm understanding, the shift in health begins with the shift in our relationship to the plants. And so herbalism is the body of work that allows you to understand which plants are meant for medicinal purposes. Is that it? Or is it like...
That's the only part of it. So there's a whole botanical section of the class. There's a whole, you know, we learn about, you know, harvest and post-harvest processing into tinctures and salves and teas. But there's a whole talk about, you know, intake of patients and understanding, you know.
Wow. So this is actually teaching you how to... And this is what I loved where we started this conversation around, you know, becoming your own healer. And what I love most about you and your work, Stephen, is you're really empowering people to become educated on how they can access the apothecary of nature and step into more healing, more liberation, more self-love. And what I appreciate most is there's a respect for the plant. Right. And that's what, like, ultimately you teach, like, you call it, like, I see your excitement when you have the plants, like there's like this massive, like, kid like wonder that comes out. But I know underneath that is actually a deep respect for the role that this plant is playing in. And it comes back to that gratitude and devotion. And do you, like, what is your relationship to learning about plants now? I mean, like, are you still on this journey of learning? Oh, yeah. And can you speak to just your love of plants and like and how you're continuing to deepen, like, what is something new you're learning right now about plants and how has that shifted your mindset when it comes to healing?
A few different things. So one thing about plants that I'm really excited about, there's this guy in Hawaii who's like my big plant crush, this guy Joe Hewitt. And he's got a farm in Hawaii and he is like cutting edge collecting things. And I, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I was at the cutting edge. Like, I was like at the forefront of exotic and interesting and useful plant collecting. We had one of the largest collections in the world of useful plants. Now there's people that's all they do. And they're so dedicated and focused and financially resourced. So there's people that are doing incredible work around the plant collecting. And you know what you wouldn't believe, Raj? A lot of that is because of these incredible Facebook groups, like these nerdy Facebook groups where people in Sri Lanka and in Brazil and in India and in Thailand and in Florida and in Southern California and in Mexico and in Peru are communicating for the first time ever about plants that they work with and how they're working, what's not working.
Wow, this is so amazing. I like love, I'm really grateful you're sharing this because, like, you know, I do a lot of work with different communities that have illness. Like one of the communities we support a lot is, you know, cancer patients. And I see the same thing, like cancer patients have these little support groups where they're just sharing the stuff that works. They're sharing the herbs that work. They're sharing the supplements that work. They're sharing the therapeutics that work. And I think that there's something about when you wake,
yeah, even the like, mind. Yeah.
It's like totally. once you wake up to this truth that you actually have more power than you've been giving yourself credit for, it almost wakes up a whole new world of passion and healing. Like, and that's kind of what you're speaking to, is just this like passionate nature of healing that awakens when you remember, like, I mean, was there a moment in your journey where you, like a plant saved your life?
I wish I could say yes, you know, but I mean, saved my life is such a, I mean, a subjective thing. Yeah. I mean, who knows where my life would have gone if I hadn't become so connected with the plants. You know, I'm so grateful every day. I'm so grateful every day of just, you know, the relationship I have with them, with the fruit trees that I tend, like even just looking at my window here, just like I'm in such gratitude of, I, you know, the most exciting thing in the world for me is like collecting some exotic seed, planting it in my nursery, keeping it there for a year, planting it in my garden, tending it for 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 years, seeing the very first flower and then the very first fruit, and then sharing it with someone I love, like all of that tending and care. And it's just like I have deep relationships with all these trees that I've cared for and loved, and, you know, and it's like, now I get to share that with you, Raj.
Well, so, okay, Stephen, you've just opened up a whole world that I need to know. Like, what does that relationship mean to you? Like, I mean, 10 years is a long time to be in relationship with something and to wait that long to bear fruit. Like, can you speak to that relationship? Like, what does that relationship to that beautiful plant mean to you?
Well, I'll give you an example. I mean, talking about the Aki. So Michael, our dear mutual friend Michael, came with me to Punta Mona a few months ago. And I fed him Aki for his first time. And he compared it to, how do you say, foie gras? That weird
duck. Foie gras.
He's like, wow, it's like foie gras, but even better. I mean, he was like so blown, cracked open. Like he was in awe. Like he couldn't believe it. Every time he would introduce me to somebody, like, oh, Stephen introduced me to this fruit. It's like, God, I haven't stopped thinking about it since. So I have two trees here on my lot where I live in the Eco Village, which I'd love to tell you about a little bit. But last week, and it's a whole process. So the fruit is, you know what? Can I one second to grab one? So I can
go grab one. Oh, man. Everybody listening, Stephen just left to go grab a, what did you just grab?
So look, these are the Aki. They're closed, they're red, and they're outside my window, and they open up when they're ready.
Oh my gosh.
And look, vegetable brain, because they look like these little, oh, this is not the best looking one. They look like little brains. Look at that.
Oh my God, yeah, yeah. That's pretty, what does it taste like?
It tastes like scrambled eggs with mushroom or foie gras, whatever you say. Anyway, Michael loved it. And I have two trees here, and they're deadly poison if you eat them before they're ripe. You know they're ripe because they open. So it's a whole process. Like you wait by the tree, and like I see there's a couple open right now out of my window. You have to pick them when they're open. So it's a very delicate process. So last week I harvested a bunch here and I brought them with me to Nosara and I fed them to Michael, his family, and all of his friends that were in town. And like one by one, they were just like, oh, what is that? You know, so just like, what feels better than spreading deep joy?
My gosh, yeah. I mean
it's so
there's like a delayed gratification that I feel like you really I mean, is it delayed gratification, or do you feel like you get gratification in just tending to the plant?
It's all gratification because it's constantly happening. Some things are fruiting, some things are flowering, some things are just starting, something for the first time. I mean, it's so exciting. And then what we did is all this love for plants is like, how can we merge this with where we live? So in 2005, I left Punta Mona and decided we need to start a village mixed with all these plants. And so my dad and I, who had just retired from being a dentist, my mom was in real estate. So we had this kind of idea, like, what if we started a community? It sounds, who starts communities? And anyway, we put together a little fund and we purchased 46 acres. We had a very distinct criteria of what we were looking for. I knew Costa Rica. I knew I wanted to be within 1 hour of San Jose because Punta Mona was so far, and I knew I wanted to be closer. I wanted to be somewhere between 400 and 800 meters above sea level because it's a great place to grow vegetables and the tropical fruits. And then I wanted to be next to a crystal clear river that I can lay on a big hot boulder. And when I get all hot and crispy, I can roll into the water and drink it. And then I also wanted to find land that had already been degraded so that I can come in and reforest it and regenerate it. You know, this whole concept around sustainability or regeneration, we can't be sustainable. You know, if I was saying, how's your relationship with your parents? You go, oh, it's sustainable. I'd be like, oh, I'm so sorry. I know some great therapists. Like, why? We don't want to just sustain. And so we had this criteria and we found this land. And now at this property where I am right now, there's 45 families from 20 countries. Wow. And then the parents co-created a school. Then my 2007 Burning Man camp, we bought the property up the street, another 25 families. And then in 2018, we bought another property, 170 acres, which is another 145 families. And there's still a few lots there left. So if you're interested, check out. And that one's called Alegria Village. And there's people from over 30 countries there. There's like already 30 houses built. And it's a dream. It merged with all these foods.
I got a question for you, Stephen. You just mentioned a word that I think gets thrown around a lot. I'm really curious to hear your perspective. What do you mean? What does it mean to thrive?
Yeah, just to thrive, like to play more than you work or not even know the difference anymore, you know, and just like really just, you know, things are just going right. You know, things are going right. You feel supported. You feel the love. You feel the connection to the land. You feel connection to your food. You feel connection to your water. You feel connection to the whole, you know, and I think that's really what we're all doing with our ice baths and our yoga and our breath work. It's like, we all just want to feel the oneness, you know, yeah. And I think that's when we're thriving, is when we connect to that oneness.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, it's again, coming back to making this a lifestyle of just devotional living. Like, I feel like that's like the, if I had to like sum up, like just a lot of the things I keep hearing in this conversation, it's like, there's devotion to your food. There's devotion to your plant. There's devotion to your neighbor. There's devotion to your water. There's devotion to learning. There's devotion to our sovereignty. Ultimately, it's coming back to remembering this devotional way of being alive. And I think when we connect to that, we are naturally thriving.
Yes.
You know, and yes. It's, yeah, no, I've taken off of you. I mean, like, this is like the way you are. It's what's so cool. Cause you know, when I first came to Nosara, like, I don't feel like I was thriving. Mm-hmm. I was super burned out. I was coming from like a high rise, you know, working super long hours, super dysregulated, very disconnected from the earth. Even though I lived in San Diego, like, I hadn't put my feet in the sand in almost like months. And like, I just feel like coming back, there's something about being in Costa Rica that kind of broke me open to remembering that there was a more holistic way of being. And it's taken me a few years to even get to this point. And so I now I'm so passionate about these philosophies, because I think what's so beautiful about your work, Stephen, is like, you came to Costa Rica, you learned all these principles, and now you're teaching people how to bring these principles home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it, right? Like, not everybody can go and live in, you know, the jungles of Costa Rica. Not everybody can, but they can take the principles of permaculture. They can take the principles of herbalism. They can take these principles from, you know, like, true Jedis like yourself in the space and all the teachers that you have in your herbalism course, and they can take those principles and start to make a positive dent in their lives. And I think that's what's so great about what you're doing and who you are. I just fucking love you, man.
Thanks, Raj. Yeah, it's been so great getting to know you, and I appreciate so much, you know, helping spread the word about all that we're doing. And I just give a quick plug, our herbalism class starts in a few weeks, and it's a complete before and after. It's like, wow, before I took that course and after I took that course, I feel radically different.
That's what's so crazy. Can you tell me about some of the transformations that have happened in that course? I'm really curious, like, because what I know about, especially like when it comes to healing and stuff, like, I think the most powerful way to really describe the power of plants is to just give an example. So whether it's from your own life or somebody from the course, like somebody who implemented something related to plants and then saw radical shifts. I'm curious if you have any examples of that.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, many people I know have been on sleeping pills their whole adult lives. They take Ambien or they take, you know, some kind of pill to go to sleep every single night because they're just so deregulated, you know, and there's so many incredible herbs. As you know, what's so interesting is that, you can go in online and order on Amazon and you can order herbs from far away, but like, what's so amazing is that no matter where you are, there are herbs for all of the things you need. You know, it's just learning them and connecting with them. And that's what's so amazing. Like here, an herb that I really relate to, when I was in eighth grade, my parents, you wouldn't believe what they diagnosed me with. That's right. Attention deficit order. The opposite of a disorder. Don't let them call it a disorder. And I went on some weird pill that like it was pre-Ritalin. It was called Silert. It ended up getting taken off the market because it was causing pancreatic failure in children. Wow. And remember like getting weird pains from it. Anyway, there's an herb here that like the Costa Rican grandparents give still to their hyperactive grandkids. It's called Tilo, Justicia pectoralis. And it's just a little ground cover that's, you know, native to here. And you can go to any supermarket here and in the tea section, they're selling tea bags of Tilo.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so much. There's so much to, it's just, there's never ending exploration. It's so fun to experiment on yourself, you know, and try things and see how you feel. And if you're on some kind of sleep medication, start trying to wean off it and try something different and see if it works. And yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. The power.
That's what's so cool. And honestly, Stephen, I don't know many people that I trust more in the world when it comes to learning about plants than you and any of the resources you create. So anybody listening, if you're interested in Ecoversity, is that the herbalism course? Like, where can they find out about it, Stephen?
Yeah, so it's ecoversity.org, and cool. Give you a link that you could put in underneath the thing. And
cool. Yeah, yeah. So we'll keep a link in the show notes for anybody who wants to go learn about the herbalism course and really anything that Stephen's up to. Stephen, I got one last question for your brother. In the midst of everything you're doing, everywhere you've been and everywhere you're going, how do you stay grounded? And most importantly, what's one thing you do every single day to just become a more grounded human being?
So every morning I drink lemon water with my sweetie and we bless it. We usually have a candle, light a candle, and we drink lemon water together and say all the magic that we want to happen that day into the water and then drink it together. That's one thing we do. We try to journal also and, you know, meditate together. It's pretty, you know, I try to go to the river a lot. You know, when I'm in Osari, I go to the sunset. I do sunset. That's kind of my ritual here. Like right when we spot finish right now, I'm going to probably go with Andrea to the river. We have, like I said, in my criteria, we have a crystal clear river. I will go lay in a big crystal clear pool right now. You know, we're in the heart of the dry season, so it's warm out right now, and I'm going to go lay in the river. So just, I always try to spend a little bit of time in nature every day.
Yeah, it can be so simple, just getting time with the mama. Stephen, brother, thank you again for sharing your heart, for being here, and for just being. I love you so much, and I'm so grateful that we get to do life alongside each other. And I can't wait to see you next, whenever that is. But everybody, that's a wrap for this week's episode of Stay Grounded. I'm your host, Raj. This is your new friend, Stephen. And from us, stay grounded. We'll chat soon. Yes. Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Stay Grounded. No matter where you're from or what you're going through, I hope it helps you remember just how incredible you are and have always been. If you're on a path of emotional healing or self-discovery and would like to learn how Liberate can support your journey, head to www.rajana.com/liberate, that is L-I-B-E-R-8, to learn more about our current group programs and one-on-one offerings. I love you guys, and I'll see you next week.